boxes and sports in halting mumbles. And there in a corner in the good chair she sits, angular jaw, crepe-skinned, permed white hair, hard of hearing, Jenny. She smiles her three-toothed grin and extends her bony blue arms. I take my place beside her. Her large mountain lake painting seems to cover the wall opposite, above the TV. Her voice is soft, with a lot of tongue slipping between her lips. Her dark, bright eyes, mirrored in all three daughters, glisten as I ask and listen. She loves to tell. She grows younger in telling about blizzards, sod houses, wagons fording the river, until we're called to the long table in the narrow room. After a short prayer, the endless passing begins. Turkey, dressing, potatoes, gravy, green beans, mystery casserole, sweet potatoes, cranberry and ruby discs, until finally it has all gone all around and we can eat. Jenny gets hers ground to mush. She gums away fitfully. She can't hear anything in the din. It will soon be time for her nap. Time for seconds and again the rite of passing. Then dessert. It is endless. I look around the table at four generations gathered. It seems it will always be so. The White Crib. 1882. The journey began with a white crib, a cage, a case, a conveyance, one April night in Cleveland when the uncles carried orphan Jenny in her crib down the street to the aunt waiting in a shawl at the door. Up to the left. It's cold. What can I do? The brown-haired girl with glowing eyes, barely three, wrapped her fat knuckles around the white dowels. She would cling to those dowels, her only home. Peering out at the unfamiliar family, her gaze sometimes peculiar with her thoughts, even then, as she waited for her father, Horace, to remarry. 1884. Now the white crib rides in a freight car, following the fuming locomotive and the bright-eyed girl west across two great rivers and along a third, the Platte. Her new mother, Mary, has not smiled since Chicago, but no woman was ever a willing pioneer. Father gave up trying to convince her this was a good idea, but here she is anyway. Too many boys and this girl. And one more headed for that crib back there. Mary gazes balefully at the treeless, blank plain. At least we'd see any savages a long way off, she grumbles. Jenny pictures an arrowhead buried in Mary's furrowed brow. Her dark hair has almost escaped its braids. It has been a restless ride. The boys squeal and tease, the girl whines for candy. Mary pops her bottom with a pretty hand. You can ask your father later. The girl pines for her crib, stowed away in back, and she sighs for her favorite brother, left back in Ohio. One child too many to come, and the uncle and aunt cherish him so, was the talk. But so does she. The train, puffy, thirsty dragon, halts in a squat wooden town, Gothenburg. Father and the wagon wait. Jenny steps off into eager arms. He has a deep gaze for the wife, returned only in flashes, and candy for the children. Crib piled into the back of the wagon with the trunks and the boys. She is nestled in a buffalo robe between Mary and Father on the box. Father lets her touch the whip. They easily ford the wide, shallow Platte River and head south. They climb a plum-trimmed canyon and reach the bare highline. No houses, no trees. Sunset, and the white crib is carried across the sod house threshold. Horace himself planed that threshold, framed the windows. He lifts Mary down. Well? She strides to the door and lifts the latch. Gleaming pine floors catch the fading light. Nice, Horace, I'm here, is all she will give him. Jenny leaps from the wagon, still clutching the buffalo robe. Red, gold, purple, green, the twilight scoop.